Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, and welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello, Tater, doing good. How are you doing? That's good. Yeah. Did you miss the snowstorm?
No, it did. I did not miss it. It hit us.
Oh, it went right by us, right to the north of us. We just got some rain.
It started snowing. I thought there was no way. I saw the snow warning coming yesterday. I had to work at like 3, so I went out for a run at like 1, and it was like 45 degrees, lovely out. I'm like, there's no way it's going to snow today. That's wild. So I got to work. First few hours were fine, and then by like 8 o'clock, it was just an absolute like just snowstorm outside. Woke up this morning. I mean, and then the truck salted and everything, so it's not bad, but totally came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was coming around there. I didn't know if you were going to get it or not.
Oh, we got it. I didn't want it, but we got it.
Well, it was like 70 here today.
Jesus, so. Good for you.
Yeah.
Do you have anything good to drink this week?
Well, I had some old standbys. As long as that Amaro Nonino holds out, I always start my evenings with a paper plane.
Love that. I love that you're doing that. That's so cool.
And I fixed a couple of those Saturday, and then I decided to go back to my old faithful, the Whiskey Sour. Mm. I hadn't had any of those in a while, and I thought, why did I stop drinking those? I need to drink those again. So my only problem was I had a full bottle of bourbon, but I didn't have any rye, and I usually like to make it with rye.
Yeah.
But I decided just go ahead and use the bourbon anyway. But what I did do, you remember that bottle of bitters that we bought in Charleston, South Carolina at that market? And they had that like smoked bacon, maple, bitters.
Those weren't bitters. That was a syrup.
Oh, syrup, I meant, not yeah. bitters. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
did you use syrup. That in it?
Yeah, I used that in
it. Oh, nice. Yeah, that was great.
It was really good.
I believe that. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so I had several of those to finish out the night.
Oh, that sounds great. I keep saying that I think you should make a honey syrup up because I think you would like, I mean, I don't, honey in a whiskey sour, I don't think that's not really called or anything. It's a bee's knees if it's gin, but I think you would like that.
Well, here's the thing is I was expecting that. I went back to take a shower and I said, hey, Mary, if you're not doing anything, would you mind making me a simple syrup, a honey simple syrup? And here's the honey. And she said, okay. And I came back from my shower there a little bit later, and I looked, and there had been no progress towards my syrup.
Well, I mean, maple syrup's a perfectly serviceable sub in, but I know you all get that good honey. You got that honey hookup from Savannah. So
yeah, it's that bourbon honey that we've got, you know.
That just makes sense.
I know. That just works.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to do that. But I did, when I was digging back through to see what else I had in it, because our cabinet, you know how small it is. Sometimes things get buried back in there. I came across my bottle of Old Tom Gin. And I'd wondered what had happened to it because I knew I didn't drink it all. And so I came across that. So I had it in my mind I was going to make an Old Tom Gin sour. And then I guess the other ones just got the better of me. They were too good. And I never got around to it. But this weekend, next weekend, I'm going to make one with the Old Tom Gin.
You should get that honey syrup together for that, though, because I find like Old Tom Gin and honey go together beautifully.
Yeah, I like Old Tom Gin a lot better than just regular gin.
I just finished my bottle of Old Tom Gin yesterday, so
I'll work on that next weekend.
I've had a lot of good drinks, but only for research purposes. The last week and a half, I've started this new job, and it's great. It's bartending 5 days a week, but it's been a lot of work.
More working and less drinking, huh?
Yeah, yeah. You know, like you just like take like a straw test of a drink. I'm like, that's good. But there's no sitting down and enjoying it. So I've had a lot of good stuff to drink this week, but nothing fun to actually sit down and drink this week.
You've had a lot of good sips, not drinks.
Not even sips, like a little, like a baby bird, just a little a dot taste. On the tongue. Like, oh, that's what that tastes like. Got it. Let me make some notes. Let me go back to work. I feel like our release schedule's been all over the place. I apologize to our listeners, if there still are any, because, you know, it's just getting up and running at this new job. My apologies.
Well, I got to say that I think that any of the customers that come in and they get a cocktail mixed up by you, that they're lucky.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I haven't told any of the people that I'm working with that I have this, you know, I'm this big time famous internet bartender. Because I think they wouldn't hire me if I said that.
Well, I always crack up every time. I'm still not used to it. I watch a show and somebody says, yes, I have a podcast. And it cracks me up. I mean, whether it's serious or just, you know, just part of the show, you know, it still cracks me up. And I think everybody has a podcast these days. You know, everybody that talks, it's a podcast.
It is not met with any sort of like, oh, wow. Like, no, it's just, that works against you in a job interview. I didn't bring it up. Like,
it went from what's that? To, oh yeah, everybody does.
Yeah. You know,
and there was no in between. Once people figured out what a podcast was, everybody's doing them.
Well, I tried to, like, when I was interviewing, it's like, well, I was trying to justify, like, I mean, I don't think, this is wild that I have to justify, why were you out of work for like a year and a half? It's like, well, because there was a pandemic, sir and ma'am. Like, there was a plague. No one was working. But, you know, you always get asked that question. And so I tried to like fill it in with like, oh, well, I was doing other stuff, like doing like alcohol history research for internet projects. It's a podcast. It's a podcast. That's what I mean. It's a podcast.
Yeah, that just shuts him up right there. Well, what are you doing? I have a podcast. Oh, like, okay. Oh,
okay. You're okay. Fired and you haven't even been hired yet. No. This new job is great. I'm very excited about it. I just, you know, won't say more because they can't know I have a podcast. They might renegotiate my contract.
Yeah, they might start playing it over the speaker system there.
No, I don't think that's the fear.
Around the clock.
I don't think that's the fear. anyway, we're not here to talk about my new job. That's what I've been doing for 6 days a week. Let's talk about something different.
Or your podcast, either.
No. We're here to talk about... okay, so we've devoted a lot of time to a lot of historical mixers. We talked about tonic. We talked about mineral water, ginger ale, ginger beer. But there's one historically important mixer that we have yet to discuss. A real apothecary mix designed specifically for mixing with whiskey. And I want to talk about that today. Can you guess what that is? I mean, you know, so it's a bit of a spoiler, but...
Well, I can guess. Are you asking me? I guess I'm the only one listening right now, so...
Yeah. Mountain Dew. We're talking about Mountain Dew. Yeah.
You know, and I've never even thought of that as a mixer. I'm not a Mountain Dew fan. I mean, I will drink it if, like, that's all that's there or something like that. But I'm not really a Mountain Dew fan. And to find out it was a mixer for whiskey, I'd never even considered putting it in there. It's like one of the highest sugar contents in a soft drink.
I mean, well, I don't want to no hate towards Mountain Dew, but just to get out in front of it, this is not us pitching the idea of, oh, you know what you've been missing? Mixing Mountain Dew with your whiskey. I think we're still kind of right on the fact that if you got a good whiskey, don't mix it with Mountain Dew. We're going to lead with that.
But I mean, the fact that the history is now, that is fascinating to me. The history is it was developed to be a mixer for whiskey because somebody had something missing in their life and needed this.
Yes, the origin, Mountain Dew, hand in hand with alcohol history in its origin. Your favorite yellow green gamer garbage is mixological in origin.
Code red.
Well, that took a while, but yes. All right. So to get back to the origin of Mountain Dew. I guess, I don't know. If we have listeners outside of America, Mountain Dew is pretty international at this point, but just if you don't know what it is, if we're reaching somebody that doesn't know what Mountain Dew is, hello. It's a citrus flavored soda. To call it like a lemon lime soda, I don't think is accurate anymore. It's a very distinct flavor. I mean, I guess it's a lemonade flavored soda.
Yeah, it's very high in caffeine.
Yeah,
it's made to keep you awake. It's almost like an alternative to coffee, a soft drink alternative to coffee. Well,
it was an energy drink before energy drinks were a thing. Like that's what we drank to stay awake was Mountain Dew. Yeah, it's a citrus flavor, more or less, but usually not seen in your high-end cocktail bars.
Well, that's what it is now.
Yes.
It didn't start out that way, no. But that's what it is now. It evolved.
Devolved? Evolved. So Mountain Dew's origin story began with two brothers, Ollie and Barney Hartman. And they were originally from Augusta, Georgia. Like that's that means something to you, Dad and Mom. I feel like I've heard y'all talk about Augusta before.
Yeah, we weren't too far from there at Waycross.
Yeah.
So we ran over there sometimes.
Well, so they worked in a soda company there that produced Orange Crush for a while. Now, obviously, Orange Crush is still with us, but there was a period where they filed for bankruptcy. So these two brothers, they relocated to Tennessee in 1932 to work for PepsiCo. Bottling beer and soda. The only problem that they encountered was that they were whiskey drinkers and they could not find their favorite, very regionally produced mixer for whiskey, which was a Prohibition era lemon lime soda called Natural Setup.
What a name.
Very appealing name. Definitely rolls off the tongue.
Natural Setup. So, I mean, it sounds like a mixer, doesn't it? It doesn't even sound like a separate soft drink. It sounds like a mixer.
Well, I was trying to figure out the history of the name, and I literally had to look up, like, listings on vintage bottle listings on, like, eBay and stuff to find out some history, because this is kind of a soda that's lost to time. It's not still made. It's a bit out there as far as information about this goes. But you can find bottles of it, like, empty bottles for sale, and it's got this, like, dice illustration on the label. And this is sort of referenced in like their motto, which was don't gamble, drink natural setup. So the idea was that the natural part of the setup referenced the roll of dice presented on the label, which is a natural roll is a thing in craps, which is either 7 or 11. And that's like a lucky roll. So, it's interesting to me because, you know, I hear a natural setup. It's a lemon lime soda. I think of 7-Up a little bit, like similar names. Was one named after the other? And this was interesting. So it's not exactly clear what came first. 7-Up was originally called. So 7-Up existed maybe before them, like early 1930s. So they started up around the same time period, right? But 7-Up's original name had no up in it. It was called Bib Labeled Litigated Lemon Lime, or Lithiated Lemon Lime Soda, because it contained lithium.
These are some catchy names they had back in those days.
Total garbage.
Natural
names.
Setup, Bib Lithium Soda.
Bib, have seven. Some lithium soda. So 7-Up had lithium. Total.
It had lithium in it?
It was a mood stabilizer. Yep, just calm down, drink some 7-Up. But it got changed to 7-Up around the 1930s, which was already when the natural setup was popular, which is interesting because the 7-Up, they kind of excused it as, oh, well, 7 refers to the 7 ingredients in it. But so you have natural setup, which references this 7 or 11 setup in craps that is lucky. And then you have 7-Up that comes around after that. It gets a name change after that. That's also a lemon lime soda. So it's, you know, there's no historical tracing of these as to what came first. But it does maybe suggest that 7-Up sort of looked at the success of natural setup and made a slightly better name that still kind of fit the same vibe. And it sold off that same flavor profile. All I'm saying.
Well, now 7-Up is a popular mixer, you know.
Well, it is. So I don't know. Are they like, hey, natural setup works. Let's make a better name than that with the same flavor and call it 7-Up. And, you know, still reference that same callback to like the dice roll. But who knows? Anyway, back to the Hartman brothers. All right, so they couldn't get their natural setup in their new location of Tennessee. So they took their soda knowledge. You know, they worked at a soda plant previously. And they brewed up a replacement that tasted like natural setup, or, well, 7-Up by then. And they called it personal setup because they originally didn't intend this for sale. They just wanted it for their own use.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually...
Yeah, they just wanted the whiskey that they had grown to know and love, the whiskey drink. And they didn't have it. And these two bubbas came all the way up from Georgia, and they said, we got to have our mixer. Well, we'll make it ourselves, by God.
They brought in this guy from, like, this Tri-City beverage to help them concoct this, which is just for their own use. So they had this quality recipe just for their own use, this personal setup. And that... Eventually, they did decide to expand. They launched it in 1946 at a soda makers convention, and they did eventually rebrand it as the name Mountain Dew, which Mountain Dew referenced this slang term for moonshine, which, of course, was mm-hmm. just hooch, whatever, illegally mm-hmm. produced alcohol associated with the Appalachian Mountain Range.
Right.
And they leaned heavily into that association. So, like, the label had, like, a hillbilly imagery to it. It had, like, the phrase, like, Yahoo, it'll tickle your innards with this little hillbilly character on it, which was, you found the guy's name.
Yeah, Hillbilly, or Willie the Hillbilly.
Oh, Willie the Hillbilly.
Yeah, that's what they called him. Oh. And if you look in the background, right in the back right-hand corner, there's one other hillbilly in there that's real small, and he's not named, and it looks like he's going in an outhouse.
Oh, all right. Great.
Now, that was in old green glass bottles.
Yeah. Well, you know, like that, like Tennessee is not outside the Appalachian Mountains, so, like, I feel like there's, you know, one thing, I've only learned this from TikTok, because obviously I grew up in Appalachia. You did too. Mm-hmm. Appalachia mm-hmm. is what I always learned it as, but I guess that's a very regional pronunciation.
Appalachia?
Appalachia.
Well, we don't pronounce anything right. I mean, you know.
Well, like, I think if we live there, then our pronunciation is right.
Oh, is that the way it is?
Well, I think if people that live in Appalachia pronounce it Appalachia, then it's Appalachia.
That's what it is then, by God. You come here, you say it the way we say it.
I'm sorry, that's Appalachia. I learned that in Pennsylvania. Well, Pennsylvania's also got some Appalachian Mountains, so that's not fair.
It sounds like that Jeff Foxworthy routine where he goes over Southern words and he says one of his favorites is sensuous. Sensuous up, could you get me a beer?
Well, you know, this is one that I think we can lay claim to. Like, however we say it is probably right. I mean, I think however people live there say it is probably the right way to say it.
That's true. Just like Hurricane.
Yeah.
Hurricane, West Virginia. It might look like, if you saw it on a map, that it's Hurricane, but it's not. It's Hurricane.
Well, hey, we got a street in New York that's called, it's spelled like Houston, but we say Houston, and it's absolutely Houston.
Houston, we have a problem.
All right, so these brothers, Harmon brothers, they take their Appalachian hillbilly Mountain Dew public at this soda convention, and it's got a good ad campaign to it. But, you know, at this point, the taste, there's already a lot of other kind of similar, like, light citrus sodas on the market. And so it really doesn't catch on. Because this is kind of the wild thing. This Mountain Dew that we're talking about at this point, it's a lemon-lime soda. It's not actually anything close to what you drink Mountain Dew as today.
And it's clear. It's not that neon green like you're used to.
Yeah.
It's a clear. It's more like 7-Up, really.
That takes a while to happen. That's really not until, like, so you get a couple things that happen at once. There's this Tri-City Beverage Company, which actually led up by the same guy that helped those brothers formulate their original Mountain Dew. He also formulates this lemonade soda that has a high concentration of caffeine in it, and he calls it Tri-City Lemonade. This is in Johnson City, Tennessee. And the taste is great, but it doesn't have the most stellar marketing. And so then this other company that gets involved, this Johnson Bottling Company, that kind of marries the recipe for this lemonade and the brand identity of Mountain Dew together, you know, buys these and combines the two. And that's finally where we get the combination of flavor, that bright yellow color, that slightly more like sweet citric flavor of Mountain Dew. And with the ad campaign, this Appalachian hillbilly imagery all combined together. And that happens in the 60s.
And you know, these guys, they were already marketing something up there that was a regional favorite called Dr. Enough. And it was also, come to find out, a lemon lime soda. But the difference was, instead of adding caffeine, they had the idea that they would vitamin enrich this with a lot of B vitamins, B1, B12, bunch of B vitamins in there, and sell it that way. And even though they sold off some of their other recipes to the bigger bottlers, they kept this one. So apparently you can still get Dr. Enough in the Johnson City area to this day. So it looks pretty interesting. And here's one of the ironic things too. It was marketed as curing hangovers. So it went right along with Mountain Dew, which was helping cause hangovers.
Well, I mean, honestly, a bunch of B vitamins is not the worst solution. Having a little bit of caffeine and B vitamins, that would help.
Yeah.
If you've ever tried that, also as an aside, any listener out there, I would love to know what that tastes like. The Dr. Enough. You would come across Dr. Enough.
I thought maybe it was an early version of Dr. Pepper. That's the only reason I looked into it. And no, it has nothing to do with Dr. Pepper. It's a totally separate drink. But then it surprised me. It's still there. And it has such a catchy slogan, too. Dr. Enough is enough.
But what more there do you have to say? It's enough.
Yeah, that pretty much covers it all. Yeah.
Does that appeal to you more than Yahoo? It'll tickle your innards.
Well, the other's catchier, I think, you know. And being from Appalachia, you know, I'm more likely to say Yahoo, it'll tickle your innards, than I am to say Dr. Enough is enough. He sounds like a Bond villain.
It does. It's a little intimidating. Like, this is enough. No need for other sodas. This is enough. Enough is all. Enough.
Enough is enough. Enough is too much.
No, enough.
Enough is never enough.
But always enough. Well, all right. So Mountain Dew is the recipe and the labeling combine in the mid-60s, 64. And this is around the time it's bought by PepsiCo.
Now, prior to that, though, the Alley Brothers sold it to this guy at the bottling company.
Yeah, yeah.
They sold it to him, and I guess they had been losing money on. They'd been trying for 10 years to get this thing off the ground, and they couldn't. So they sold it to him for the price of dinner. He took them to dinner and bought them dinner, and they gave him the recipe for it, and he took it from there. So I guess they were just glad to get out from under it, but at least they had it for their mixer, so it was going to be there, and they could go back to just drinking their whiskey.
Well, but I guess that's not really true, though, is it? Because their original mixer was that original lemon-lime soda, and then Mountain Dew's formula changed to more of this other completely different soda. So,
yeah, but they probably claim that, you know. It was still the same name as what they had, so they probably claimed that, and I'm sure they drank their whiskey with it and just said, yeah, it's good enough. Well, not Dr. Enough, but it's good enough.
I get. I mean, I do think it's like whiskey and like a 7-Up, maybe. Whiskey and Mountain Dew. Whew. Mountain Dew's a lot more aggressive as a flavor. But, so they sold it off. It was eventually ended up in PepsiCo's hands. And they actually, see, you know, this sort of hillbilly imagery, I think, in a modern time, we might look at it, it's like, that's a little, I think, insulting to the people of Appalachia, right?
Right. Like, that's, and also, it's not really a wide-ranging appeal. You know, how many people on the West Coast are like, well, I see the hillbillies are drinking it, so we should. I'll have a bottle of red over here, Red Mountain Dew.
I mean, I wish, like, you know, this is totally outside argument, but I wish we here in America, like, held up our sort of, you know, base level culture a bit more like other countries do. Like, you know, like he's like, oh, like the whatever, like the peasant food is like our core culture. Like you get that in France and like other countries, but here in America we're like, no, whatever, those are poor people. So, you know, and I wouldn't be adverse to that. Like that would also that would work out for people in Appalachia if we had some like love and like care for the cuisine there. But that's an aside.
Yeah, they kind of felt like they would be better off marketing it to a young crowd
that took
and trying to hit them.
But they did try to make the hillbilly thing work for them, and this is wild to me. Yeah. So in 1964, PepsiCo, if they took ownership, they rented out the Waldorf Astoria Ballroom at a Pepsi bottling convention, and they built a quote unquote hillbilly aesthetic cabin to have somebody named Daisy May handing out samples of Mountain Dew to rich people.
Well, they also did advertising. One of the popular TV shows at the time was the Beverly Hillbillies.
Sure.
So they did their advertising around when the Beverly Hillbillies aired and tried to get that tied together because that was a very popular show.
Well, I just like that. Well, this was mid-60s, so I just can't...
Yeah, that's when that was,
walking into the Waldorf Astoria, and they've built this, quote-unquote, hillbilly aesthetic cabin in this incredible, like, rich people's den to be like, look, it's hillbilly drink. It's a mass-produced, marketed soda.
But that's kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies. They brought Granny's cabin from the woods to Beverly Hills when they moved there after they struck oil, you know, as this song goes, and up from the ground come a bubbling crude. And they brought the cabin there and had it in the backyard. And of course, the daughter or the niece or whoever she was, Daisy May, she was one of the characters that lived there.
Well, that was popular at the time, but alas. Not alas, it's a good thing that the hillbilly theme eventually fell out of favor until in 1973. And that's when they kind of, first they tried to alter their packaging to kind of keep it in the same vibe, but make it more to like, oh, we're appealing to hippies now. They had the phrase like, get the barefoot feeling on Mountain Dew for a while.
You make you lose your shoes when you drink it.
Yeah, then took them a while, and then eventually, I mean, their big hit, of course, was at the extreme sports arena in the 90s when all of a sudden it was just, you know, that and, like, with gaming and just, like, oh, there's a lot of caffeine. Drink it to stay awake. Drink it to stay energized. You know, they dropped all the vowels, and it was just Mountain Dew, you know.
Yeah. Well, that was where they really hit the next level when they started tying it to gaming.
Yeah.
When the gamers needed to stay up all night. They were up all night with these games, and they had to stay awake. So they tied it to that. And that's where they really found a big market.
Well, and it eventually came full circle because just recently, just this last year, PepsiCo partnered with Boston Beer Company to make some alcohol-infused drinks, hard Mountain Dew flavors. Which I think I've seen them in New York. I don't know. They're in limited markets, I think, still. But so now we've finally the alcohol has found its way into Mountain Dew as it was originally designed to be a mixer. So
well, I've never seen that or knew that it existed.
Yeah. Their flavor, all of their various flavors, which I think it's interesting to me that instead of making different soda flavors with different names, they just kept everything under the Mountain Dew label and just named them as different versions of Mountain Dew. They have nothing in common with Mountain Dew, like Code Red, whatever, Baja Blast. These are entirely different flavor combinations. We just market them all under Mountain Dew because that's the name that sells.
Yeah, and they worked with Taco Bell to design the Baja Blast to come up with a flavor that supposedly would work best with, you know, the type of food that Taco Bell serves. And that's where they came up with it. And they had 10-year exclusive contract to only sell them at Taco Bell's, not even Yum Foods, which owns Taco Bell's, but just Taco Bell's. And when I think that expired like 2014 or something.
Yeah.
So now you can get Baja Blast like in stores and things. But before, the only place you could get it was at Taco Bell. And it was also designed where you could use it as a mixer. You get a Baja Blast and add liquor to it.
That's the Taco Bell cantinas, which there's one. Hey, I don't know about where you live, but here in Brooklyn, I got access to a Taco Bell cantina that does a frozen Baja Blast that you can add tequila to.
Wow. I've got a fake one here that doesn't ever, it's usually not ever open.
What does that mean?
Well, it opened up like 2 or 3 years ago, and I think there's been 5 cars ever go there. I don't know. It's never open. When it is, nobody's ever there, and they don't have liquor. I don't know. They must be selling drugs out of the back or something.
Cantina only in name.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I don't know how the thing's still in business.
Well, I don't know. I hope you. I mean, I have not partaken. I went there for I sometimes when I'm just feeling like garbage, I like to get the potato inside the burrito, because you can do that as like a vegan option, and it's delicious, and it costs $2. And you know what? I'm not ashamed. I do it. That was the cantina in my neighborhood is the first place I've done that at. And I was like, why is there tequila behind this counter? I'm so confused. There's like a DJ setting up. So I have not gone back to the Broadway Taco Bell cantina after the sun goes down because I'm afraid of what happens there, but I'm also deeply, deeply curious.
It's the vampires come out.
Or like the best party or the worst party ever. It's one or the other.
It's Taco Bell madness.
I think it sounds great. And Baja Blast is essential to that party. And I'm sure Mountain Dew is essential to many parties on many frat houses around the country.
Mountain Dew, is it to keep you awake or is it to mix your drink?
It's both, and don't do either, probably based on your doctor's recommendations.
That's about like a vodka and Red Bull.
Well, it's all in one.
Yeah,
you buy the alcoholic one. But I thought that was interesting. I don't know, like I would never have thought that. I knew Mountain Dew's name probably referenced moonshine, just because that's what's an old name for moonshine. But I did not know it was so intrinsically tied to alcohol in origin.
I heard Jimmy Buffett call it honeydew vine water.
Moonshine, not Mountain Dew.
Moonshine, yeah, right. No, moonshine.
That is far too poetic for Mountain Dew.
Honeydew vine water. That was when the bear got hold of it. I guess that was before Cocaine Bear. That was Moonshine Bear.
Moonshine Bear,
and he got hold
is
of
the
it.
Spiritual predecessor to Cocaine Bear, which I hope you've ever seen, maybe after having a few Mountain Dews and whiskeys. That and feels like the right drink to have.
And the drunk guy went up to the bear and said, Mr. Bear, I love every hair on your 27-acre body.
For further reference, listen to, what's that song called?
Jimmy Buffett, God's Own Drunk.
There you go. God's Own Drunk. That's really by somebody else, right? Is that Jimmy Buffett original?
Yeah, Lord something, I forget it, but Jimmy, he wrote it originally, but Jimmy Buffett popularized it.
Okay, he covered it. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so there you go. There's your history of Mountain Dew. Try a bottle with your favorite very affordable whiskey. Don't put it in something nice, but you know, check it out.
Yeah.
Again, whatever it was designed for, that formula changed back in the 60s, so I don't think it's fair to say it was designed for whiskey now.
No, this was not what the Bubba Boys had in mind when they came up from Georgia.
You just keep changing their name. You call them the Alley Boys, the Bubba Boys. They were the Hartman Boys, Dad.
Well, they came from Georgia, so they both were nicknamed Bubba, I'm sure. Everybody down there is Bubba.
Everybody from Georgia is Bubba Boy?
Okay. Yeah, they're all Bubba. That's what I heard them all call each other when we lived down there. They were all Bubba. Hey, Bubba.
Well, all right.
And we did have a Mississippi Smith there.
Mississippi Smith? Is that just anybody from Mississippi?
No, that was his name, Mississippi Smith.
Oh, that's a good
name.
That's
what he went by. Yeah, he didn't play cards or nothing, but he should have with a name like that.
Okay, well, this is I've been
this
Bubba.
This is the way my brain works.
I've been Bubba, and Dad's been Bubba, and this has been it's been neat. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Taylor, for having me. This was a fun soda pop course.
Now we know. Thank you all for joining us. If you want to find us on the internet, you can find us at Neat Boozcast on Instagram. You can find us at meettheboozcast@gmail.com if you want to email us questions or comments. And hey, if you want to have conversations about your favorite flavor of Mountain Dew, you can do that
at Meet the Boozcast group page on Facebook. A little dabble, do you?
Right. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
Meet. Yeah, they would have been forced to change their advertising if they hadn't already done it a while back, because that would be, you know, geographically insensitive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like Appalachian people are rare to be like, hey, that's not true.
When I was young, I used to get offended when people would say that we're all hillbillies. Nah, I don't care. Okay, you're not.
I mean, I don't. I mean, having moved out of the state and moved to New York, I'm amazed at how often, like, how many questions I got about the status of my teeth and my shoes and whether or not I was, like, related to a sibling in an incestuous way.
Like that's, well, my own cousin had to ask me, is West Virginia its own state or is it just the western part of Virginia? And I'm like, you're related to me. You know me. You know where I live. Count 50 states. Count. How do you get to 50 if you don't, if we're not? We like to think of ourselves as best Virginia.
You know what? I think given what Virginia has to offer, that's fair.